In his self-described art biography, which he calls Eminent Hipsters, Donald Fagen recalls being 8 years old when his family moved from the urban landscape of Passaic, New Jersey, to a new suburban development. For me, he writes, a subterranean in gestation with a real nasty case of otherness. It was a prison. I had been framed and sentenced to a long stretch of hard labor in Squaresville.
That's right.
Luckily for Mr. Fagen, there was radio, books, and music, which offered an escape from parents and what many felt was the homogeneous existence of the 1950s in America. Donald Fagen is, of course, one half of the band Steely Dan, and in his book, which is published by Viking, he first explores the cultural touchstones of his youth and then takes us on tour, providing a glimpse of the sometimes difficult life on the road as a rock musician who's in his 60s. I'm pleased to welcome Donald Fagen to our show.
Hello. Hi.
Yours is a rather untraditional memoir, the first half being about your childhood in post-war America and the people who influenced you, and the second half is a tour diary from 2012. What made you structure the book that way?
Actually, I had some help from my editor, Paul Slovak, over at Viking. Originally, it was just going to be essays, a collection of stuff I've written over the years, plus some new things. But in 2012, during the summer, I went out with Boz Skaggs, Mike McDonald, with a group we called the Dukes of September, and I started keeping a journal, and when we got back, I sent it to Paul, and he really loved it, so we put it in there.
Have you always written?
I used to write a little in high school. I was on the high school newspaper, that sort of thing, but I really didn't, when I started writing songs, that kind of was a sufficient outlet for, me and my partner writing songs and all that, but in the 80s, I had a songwriting block, and I had an opportunity to write for this magazine Premiere doing a column on film music. So I really started again when I was in my 40s.
You just wrapped up a tour with a seven-night stand at the Beacon Theater here in New York City. Walter.
Yeah, with Steely Dan, right.
And Walter Becker, your a longtime bandmate. Did anything happen that you wish you could have included in the book?
Well, sure. It's a little harder. It would be a little harder. I didn't keep a journal this last summer. It would be a little harder to write about Steely Dan because there's so many close friends and people that yeah, well, it's the same with the Dukes. The thing was it was really a very interior journal. It was really about me. It was kind of about me vis-a-vis the venues, the audience, the hotels, that type of thing. I don't know what I do. If I was writing about the band and stuff like that, it might be a little more dangerous.
Well, some people love touring, and some people seem to hate it.
Yeah, I don't really hate it either. I hate to give that impression. It's tough, and I think that I wanted to give. The first few days I was keeping the tour, it was really just for me to sort of have an outlet. But I realized it would be a good opportunity to tell people what it's really like to be on tour.
Well, I'm sure it changes when you're young and you're seeing places you never
saw
before.
It's totally different from when I was young. Yeah.
And now you're older and, oh, boy, this is just a job and where are we going to go
tomorrow? Yeah, I don't remember much about when I was touring when I was young. It's kind of a blur. But now that
which you explain in this book.
Yeah.
Have you read any of the recent memoirs of your peers, like Bob Dylan's Chronicles One or Keith Richards' Life or Neil Young's Waging Heavy Peace?
No, I'd like to. I haven't. I took a look at Chronicles, and that seemed great, really. I actually lost my copy, so I didn't finish it. But no, I'd like to see. There's a bunch of them out right now.
You've been called grumpy, a proud snark, and a crank. And in the tour diary, you even refer to yourself as a puny malcontent.
Yeah, that's actually more, that's closer.
You proud of
malcontent.
That?
Yeah, I noticed this thing, I don't know where this grumpy thing came from. It might be true, but I noticed, you know what it is? I think, you know, one review comes out and says he's grumpy, and then these adjectives like just keep being repeated by other
people. Just rip
reviewers,
off each other's reviews.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's also that you have developed a distinct voice in this book, and it isn't the one that we're used to. It isn't a gosh, wow, everything's so exciting kind of voice.
Well, I don't know if gosh, everything is so exciting accurately defines the voice I use with Steely Dan.
No, I said it isn't that.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you mean. Yes. No, it's not that. It was never that. But sometimes I kind of put on that, even though I'm talking about something that perhaps doesn't deserve that delivery.
Well, you write about life in the 50s and 60s, suburbia and assimilation, the constant warnings of the threat of nuclear annihilation.
Yeah.
LSD, the rise of the counterculture.
Yeah, were you paranoid in the when you were growing up about the bomb and all that?
I realized when they had us get underneath our desks to save us from the atomic bomb, mm-hmm. that was going to be totally useless because I had already heard about radiation.
Yeah, I know. It was like, I know,
The joke was now kiss your butt goodbye.
Yeah. Generally speaking, it was like at a very young age, you know, you realize that desk with the inkwell in it wasn't really going to help you, you know.
But do you think there are any analogous issues facing young people today?
I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I'm sure that they see the world as troubled and they see what's going on in Washington.
It's terrorism, incompetence in government, same thing. I think a lot of the same issues involved. There was something really just so total about, you know, nuclear destruction that I think was just, and it was new also, you know.
And many apartment buildings had that that yellow and black sign that
kind
said
of,
that
yeah,
there
right.
there was a
civil defense.
Right, there's a space downstairs where you go in the basement.
And every radio had a Conelrad station that you would tune in case of nuclear emergency. It was pounded into every day, you know. So it's not surprising that we were a little tense.
So do you think that formed you in a way?
Totally. Yeah, I think somewhere I mentioned in the book that I, at one point, I was kind of a little junior Mad Max. I had I went to a Army-Navy store and got a little utility belt, one of those military belts where you could hook things on. I had a canteen where I had a canteen and stuff because I was anticipating this kind of, I also read science fiction, so I was used to all these dystopian landscapes and so I was prepared.
You're going to be a survivalist.
Absolutely.
In your introduction, you write, I tried to grow up. Honest. Didn't quite happen. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm someone for whom youth still seems more real than the present or the half century in between. And why not? I'm deeply underwhelmed by most contemporary art, literature, music, films, TV.
Yeah.
Underwhelmed by there's some pretty good stuff out there.
Yeah, there is some good stuff. But, you know, the stuff you're bombarded with every day is there's a lot of a whole vast empire of soulless crap that you're bombarded with that wasn't so back in the, you know, 60s.
Well, I'm curious about the title, Eminent Hipsters. Now, mm-hmm. the word hipsters these days generally is applied to a guy with a beard and some tattoos and a small fedora who probably lives in Williamsburg.
Well, that's typical of what I'm talking about. You know, it's become a cartoon of what it may once have been. I mean, hipster is truly, it's a very, you know, the word has changed. And even in its day, it was hard to say exactly what it meant.
I remember
Norman Mailer's essay, The White Negro, was the idea that it was a disaffected white person who had some characteristics of what he saw as the underclass black person, you know. But Everyone can define it in their own way. And I was using it really to talk about these sort of marginal artists that influenced me when I was young. Gene Shepherd, the radio monologist.
WOR.
Yeah, absolutely.
Late Night, Mort Figa, had a radio show called Jazz Unlimited.
Jazz DJ and, certain musicians and so on.
So it was late night radio that disaffected kids listened to?
Yeah, pretty much. Younger people might know I'm from this sort of popular music called The Christmas Story, which is based on one of his radio monologues, and he narrates that movie. He had a very distinctive voice, so that's kind of a watered-down version of his actual rap.
My guess is Donald Fagen, his book, Eminent Hipsters, it is published by Viking. Well, I remember him as somebody who encouraged us to be anti-establishment. I horrified my parents when he encouraged me to put the radio out the window, and he yelled, "You're all phonies!"
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, actually, yeah.
You mentioned the white Negro. Well, you include the first entry in your tour diary. You write about being sensitive to the fact that your band is basically three white guys playing a black style of music. Is that any different from what Elvis Presley, the Rolling Stones, Eric Clapton, Janis Joplin, and so many others did when they were copying the music of black musicians and selling it to white audiences?
Not essentially. I think, just like today, I think a lot of white kids saw something lacking in the American culture. And we're looking for something that had more depth or more soul or more life to it. And so they looked to African-American culture for just the music was better.
Well, why would that even be a concern for you in 2012 when you wrote it?
Because being a person of, my generation, I'm always afraid that there's a kind of perceived minstrelsy about what we're doing. Even though we have some black people in the band and all that, the three leads are white guys. All to some degree or another, grew up listening to black music and were influenced by it. So I don't know. It may be not such a big a deal as it is in my mind.
Well, if you play something that has been influenced by something else, that is also a tribute to it.
Yeah,
you include
for sure.
Pieces about specific musicians, a rather eclectic group that includes Ray Charles, Henry Mancini, Ike Turner, but mm-hmm. not Tina, Ennio Morricone, and the Boswell sisters. Mm-hmm. Well, Steely Dan is known for its complex arrangements that meld jazz, rock, and R&B. Is there a common thread between those people you write about and the kind of music you play?
Well, I think, Walter and I, not through any particular scheme or anything, but just intuitively used everything that we liked, and combined it into a kind of music to create the albums that we did. And I think both of us, strangely, when we were kids, grew up as jazz fans, but we also, we had a pretty broad listening base. We both liked, because we were jazz fans, we were also familiar with the standards, the vocabulary of jazz.
Well, that includes improvisation, and most rock musicians don't improvise.
But they're based on the standards from the 30s, 40s, and 50s, so we're familiar with those things. We're familiar with some what you could call classical music from the late 19th century and early Stravinsky, that kind of thing. And we both like blues and rhythm and blues.
And you met at Bard College?
Yes.
Did you recognize each other as kindred spirits?
Yeah. Pretty much right off. Uh-huh.
But then you also are in the Dukes of September with Boz Scaggs and Michael McDonald.
Mm-hmm.
Different kinds of kindred spirits?
Yes. I think that that's a more straight musical relationship. You know, with Walter back in the day, you know, we had other interests in common that tended towards the literary. We both like science fiction of the day. We were both fans. We both liked what in those days was called black humor, which had nothing to do with African-American people.
Lenny Bruce.
It had to do with, actually, Philip Roth was in those days connected with that. But there was Thomas Berger. There was Terry Southern. There was a number of different authors who were connected. Kurt Vonnegut. And then comedians like Lenny Bruce.
So in listening to your lyrics, should I look for those as influences?
You could be aware of it. I don't know if you could, you know. It's not like we were trying to quote them or anything like that.
Donald Fagen's written an autobiography or a memoir or some other kind of book.
Whatever it is, yeah.
You're calling it an artobiography.
Yeah.
It's Eminent Hipsters, and it is published by Viking. And I want to thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you. It was great being here.